Welcome to NeuroNoodles, Neurofeedback and Neuropsychology Podcast, featuring tech legend Jay Gunkelman. He is the man who has read over 500,000 brain scans. Our goal is to provide information and promote options for better mental health. The NeuroNoodle Podcast is supported by listeners and businesses just like you. Like our gold supporter, Applied Neuroscience, and our silver supporter, Mind Media. Earn up to 16 CEU hours by attending Applied Neuroscience's NeuroGuide workshops in Madeira Beach, Florida. They're led by none other than Dr. Robert Thatcher himself. There are two ways you can attend, online or in person, with the link appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. Earn up to 16 CEU hours. Sign up now at appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. Mind Media. Get the latest EEG and neurofeedback technology from mindmedia.com. Their semi-dry sensor caps is a wonder to see, and their EEG amplifiers have been trusted in the field for decades. Their neurofeedback and QEEG courses will get you up to speed in no time. Visit mindmedia.com now. Dr. Hazan, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
You are the heart rate variability guru. Two books. Let me see here. Clinical Handbook of Biofeedback, Biofeedback and Mindfulness in Everyday Life, TED Talk. I mean, you are it. Do you know Jay?
I know Jay.
Jay is it.
Somehow we've crossed paths over the years at dozens of meetings.
Absolutely. I think it's impossible not to know Jay. I have various pictures of you, you know, hovering over groups of people.
Yeah, I photobomb folks at the meeting. So,
those are fun.
So let's talk breathing. How did you get involved? You came to the country when, doctor?
Let's see. I was 14 years old.
14 years old. You got to learn the language.
Yep.
Right. Which was going through school, not a problem.
I'm 74. I still have to learn the language.
Don't we all?
How did you get introduced to biofeedback, neurofeedback, breathing, mindfulness? How did this all affect you? How did it start?
Let's see. I was in graduate school. I was interested in health psychology. One of the practicums offered this thing called biofeedback that I knew absolutely nothing about. It was optional. You know, I was busy, but I figured, you know, let's give it a try. So I did. I loved it. Haven't looked back since.
As Jay has always said, the simplest thing that you can do, because we've done this show through a few crises going on, you know, you had, you know, the war going on, and, you know, people can't get access to treatment, but they can figure out their breathing. Remember that, Jay?
Yeah.
Is that simple? That's the simplest thing you can do, but people won't do it. They'd rather, you know, pop a pill or whatever. Why is that?
You know, I wonder if it's sometimes because it feels too simple. Yeah. You know, everybody's told, oh, you know, take a deep breath, you know, just breathe, right? So it's kind of like when people who resist exercise because walking seems like nothing. So they're, you know, but doing more intense exercise is too much time, too difficult, et cetera, right? But walking seems like it's just not enough. I have a feeling that few people have the same sense about breathing. It's just nothing. It's not enough. Whereas it actually makes a huge difference.
And it's not just breathing. You know, I've been breathing all my damn life, but it's not the same as HRV. You know, your body has some built-in mechanisms. And I think in the U.S. we were very fortunate. The science of it in Russia was brought over to the United States. And Paul Lehrer interfaced with a brilliant gentleman. At my age, I'm blocking on his name. He passed recently.
Yevgeny Vashilov.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he offered a depth knowledge that would have taken halfway to forever for people to figure out from scratch again. And it was a gift of science. You know, science people kind of step past politics quite often, and regardless of what might have been going on between one government and another, science is universal. And it was a wonderful gift of science that he brought. And and you know, Paul talked and talked and taught, and the folks that picked up the technique ended up doing, you know, studies with it, and you know, and now it's hard to go to a biofeedback neurofeedback meeting without people discussing HRV and the interaction with the brain, you know, heart brain interactions. And you measure the heartbeat and then look at the event related potential in the brain paced, you know, triggered by the QRS complex, and you end up seeing that the two systems are interactive. So, you know, we quite often in neurofeedback or EEG think of ourselves as some weird disembodied brain, you know, and it doesn't work like that. I mean, we're systems, and the systems have complex interactions, and without really knowing what we're doing, we've all kind of stumbled along in our life. But, you know, some simple tricks like HRV end up being very, very powerful. I told Pete earlier about a friend who was going over to help the Syrian refugees in France. There's a refugee camp that's gigantic, and, you know, people suffering. And she's got a big heart, and she came to me asking, what EEG device should I bring with me? And I said, well, you know, you could treat maybe a few dozen people with EEG, you know, doing the studies and then, you know, doing the sessions and so forth. But you could help hundreds, maybe thousands of people by teaching HRV. And the person you teach can teach. So that's what she went with. And it took quite a while for anybody at the refugee camp to feel open enough to actually interact with her at all. There's a lot of people that descend on refugees that are predators. Shall we cut to the chase? They're predators. And it took her interacting with one of the elders and actually teaching him, and he realized the benefit and basically told everybody, she's okay. And she was flooded with people at that point. And her time there, I think, was very beneficial for her as well. I mean, the interpersonal benefits end up benefiting everybody in the interpersonal relationship. The therapist, the client, the people surrounding the clients, everybody benefits.
So why aren't they teaching this in the schools? Start them young. It's so simple. What's the... I don't understand.
Wouldn't that make sense?
Yeah, because we have parents. I help out the parents. Jay helps out the techs. And then Dr. Hazan, you can help out everybody else at the advanced level. But the moms and dads out there, they got their kids even just stressing for finals, because we're in finals, you know, time. Breathing before a test, I would think that would help with the test, right?
It really does. And somehow there's just not enough knowledge about this out there, even though it's so much more easily accessible these days with technology. And the science is clearly there. But most of the time when I talk about this with people who are kind of not in our too close-knit community, they have no idea.
I wonder what is the holdup? It's not sexy, or the drug companies have more money? What's the holdup? We got the data that says that it works. You know, I hate poking fingers at things while having a solution. How do we fix this? The lawmakers put it in the in, in the in the federal schools. What do we
That'd
do?
Be good. Today? I think a lot more funding needs to go towards getting the word out there and making the technology accessible. I think part of this is technology, even though what's needed is fairly simple, is still needed. And you know, people need access to it. You know, it needs to be reliable. It needs to be fairly inexpensive. And there's not a lot of options. Again, not most importantly, not enough knowledge. I think that's where we need to put a lot of our attention.
So if you had a magic wand, doctor, how would you do it? Let's just start with the kid, moms and dads in the schools. How would a school day start? Or is it in the home? Or is it both? Magic wand. Go ahead.
Yeah, magic wand. Ideally, both, right? You know, so many kids struggle with regulation. And teachers and parents are going, we don't know what to do. And there is something very simple. The whole family can learn. The whole class can learn all together. Kids love this. You know, I've come in and done these presentations at my kids, you know, various times in their schooling. Young kids love it. You know, they come up with, you know, awesome imagery, you know, for having a balloon in their belly that they're inflating with their breath in and, you know, they're deflating with their breath out. You know, they color these balloons in their mind, sometimes actually on paper, you know, pink balloons with purple unicorns and all sorts of cool things, you know, added on to that. And they love it. It's their balloon to carry with them. And then they can use that imagery to help them when they're feeling dysregulated, when they're feeling overwhelmed, you know, when they're older before a test. And somehow it's still not being taught enough. So if I had a magic wand, this would be part of, you know, initial classroom orientation for, you know, in every single classroom in every single school.
Do you go through the counselors or is it part of phys ed? What do you think the easy?
Probably the counselors. Yeah. The counselors. Yeah.
I think that kindergarten and first grade teachers who have rest periods and things like that in their class, mindfulness, as an approach ends up being something that works well as well. And if you start the kids out early and give them a tool to handle their inner angst, their inner aggression, whatever is off center for them, it gives them a tool. So, and once you've got HRV, it's not like somebody can take it away from you. it's really straightforward, and it's something that you can do in your car when you're driving, when things are stressful. You can do it at work when something has blown up and you feel stressed. There's no place that you can't breathe, and there's no place that you can't have some moments of mindfulness. So these tools, when once learned and once handed out early in life, I think would change the trajectory of these young kids' lives. High school, it's almost a bit late. That there's huge turmoil in schools and aggression and all of that as hormones and whatnot start to kick in later in life. If you've got the kids trained up in these techniques early in life, you avoid a lot of the stress-related acting out that may end up being triggered by hormones and social difficulties that start to develop as people start to reach out socially. And we have to start early, and we can't wait for, oh, well, it's a course in your junior college. Sorry, it's a bit late. You know, there's shootings and stabbings and things that happen because of people's being stressed out and anxious and acting out. And a lot of that would be avoided. So it's a shame that it's not instituted basically from top down within school systems.
Well, Seaborn Fisher always says that trauma in your early youth, you know, affects you later in life. It's almost like preschool or even younger to learn how to do it, to set you off in a better path. Doctor, I'm just going off of the notes and the videos that I've watched of you in the past. It's you say breathe in like you're smelling a flower, blow out like you're blowing out a candle, and you shoot for a certain amount of breaths in a minute. If the moms and dads are listening and they want to implement this, how would you teach them? What, because they're like, all right, I'm going to watch this for 30 seconds. Let me see if I'm going to do it or not. How would you do it?
Well, the simplest thing is, yeah, take a normal size, comfortable breath in. So we're not doing deep breathing here. Without getting into the physiology of it, there's no need for a deep breath. Normal size breath in through the nose as if you were smelling a flower for 4 seconds. And then, you know, breathing out as if you are blowing out a candle on a cake for 6 seconds. And this is for adults. The timing is going to be different for kids. But for adults, you know, 4 seconds in, 6 seconds out. That's the simplest thing, you know, breathe like that for, you know, 3 minutes, or even taking, you know, 10 breaths like this is going to make a really big difference in the moment. You know, ideally, the person would also have access to an HRV reader and could actually get some data and figure out their own personal resonance frequency breathing rate. You know, that four in, six out is kind of, you know, an average one size fits all. It's nicer if someone can figure out their own personal resonance frequency breathing rate, because it could be a little higher or a little lower than six. But hey, you know, we'll take what we can get. You know, if the reader or the software to go with it is not available, 4 in, 6 out.
And you have an app, right?
I do. So Optimal HRV is designed specifically to help walk people through the beginning, you know, middle, end of HRV training, from monitoring your initial heart variability to establish a baseline, to determining your resonance frequency breathing rate so that you can do your training in the most ideal personalized way, and then doing HRV biofeedback training and combining that with mindfulness and self-compassion practice. So if all of that together in one app, you do need an HRV reader. We are working on being able to take the readings from the phone camera. That's coming soon. Okay. Not there yet. Right now, you do need a reader. But any Bluetooth device that's open, you know, so a Polar strap, you know, the M-Wave, you know, bio straps, you know, CoreSense, you know, all of these readers that are capable of Bluetooth connection and are, you know, that are open, will connect to the app and help people do their training.
If I was smarter, I would have your app already up. I just have my, you know, my Steve Jobs stuff here, and I never know what this stuff means, okay? Because, you know, I'm the mom and dad on the show. Heart rate variability, 32 milliseconds. Is that good or bad?
That's such an excellent question and such an excellent example of the trouble that we're in. So many devices will give you these numbers with zero explanation as to, you know, as to what that is, what that means, what to do with it. Absolutely, right? So is that an Apple Watch that's giving you the 32 Apple milliseconds? Yeah. Okay. So the Apple Watch is likely giving you an SDNN measurement, standard deviation of normal to normal interval. And 32 seconds, it also depends on your age, right? Your HRV is very age dependent.
24.
Excellent. For 24, you have a little ways to go to increase that. Okay. If you're a little older than 24, I think
you're, what if you're, I'm double well, that
you're doing well then.
Okay.
Yeah, HRV does decrease with age, sadly.
All right, what if I'm 56?
I would have to look up your norm specifically. Okay. But I'm gonna say you're pretty much where you need to be. Okay. So that's great.
All right.
But that's the thing. You need to know what to do with those numbers, right? You know, they're, you know, the Oura Ring, the Whoop, you know, all these, you know, all these devices give you information without necessarily explaining what it is that you're looking at or what to do with it, which I think is another reason why we're not making better use of it, because we're amassing tons of data.
And I have to say that it, as dumbed down as those numbers are, they tend to track life experience pretty closely. Recently, we had a death in the immediate family here in the house. My partner's mother passed. And for about a month or so before she passed, I mean, it was becoming very difficult And HRV numbers for me dropped about 20 points. And they stayed down for a period of time. And quality of sleep, the HRV numbers, everything ended up reflecting the strain of the stress. And you know, a lot of people point at it as stress, but it's actually strain. You know, the stress is the thing out there that you're responding to. Stress is what you're doing with respect to it. And the stress showed itself in the HRV numbers again with about a 20 point drop, and to a seriously concerning lower numbers for me. So you know, I had to start doing daily HRV deliberate, you know, practice to kind of counteract the amount of stress so that I didn't show the strain. And you know, it's a few months since she passed now, and everything is back to normal levels. But it's interesting to track that as a number, as a reflection of kind of, you know, what's the stress level, and am I suffering strain from the stress that's surrounding me? And it's astoundingly sensitive.
Absolutely. I mean, ultimately, HRV is probably the best measurement we have of our ability to self-regulate in general, and the best cue we have for, hey, there is something going on, right? Just like you described, Jay. I mean, you know, you knew what was going on. But oftentimes people, you know, the first clue they have that, you know, there is something that needs to be paid attention to from their HRV readings, and people can intervene a lot sooner. In your case, you know, you knew like, hey, this is really affecting me. I know I need to do something about it, right? You know, start using HRV training a little bit more regularly. How amazing is that, right? You know, you know something is happening, and it tells you what you can do about it. How great would it be if all of us could take that morning reading, you know, 3 minutes, once a day in the morning, first thing you do, really small time commitment, and it gives you so much information. You know, where am I for the day? Yeah. You know, is this a day when I take on a new challenge? Is this a day when I take it easy and rest? Yeah.
And he has the watch. I have an Aura Ring. Mm-hmm. And an Apple Watch. You know, so I can end up comparing technology to make sure I've got validated numbers and everything. But things tracked really quite nicely. And these aren't the only things. I mean, there's Fitbits, and pretty much everybody has caught on. All of the athletic tracking devices out there. I saw that you and Santiago, who, given the time zone difference between Singapore and here, it's, I don't know, what's it, 2 a.m. or some darn time like that.
Yeah.
So he's not with us, but the two of you did a presentation together, and I think that's extremely fruitful. Cross pollination. I grew up in farm country in Fargo, so I use agricultural analogies a lot, you know. But it's really positive to see the international presentations. It may have spun out of Russia, but it didn't like trickle through Europe to get here. And it had to bounce back to Europe and down to South America and over to Asia. So at this point, there really isn't anywhere that's missing the fundamental information about it. Now, the high level science of it is still very, very high level science. I have to say, the spectral analysis, tracking sympathetic, parasympathetic aspects of it with high frequency, low frequency content, things like that are beyond just the count your breathing time in and out. But the depth of science and knowledge that's available from it is huge and largely still untapped.
Earn up to 16 CEU hours by attending Applied Neurosciences NeuroGuide workshops in Madeira Beach, Florida. They're led by none other than Dr. Robert Thatcher himself. There are two ways you can attend, online or in person, with the link appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. Earn up to 16 CEU hours. Sign up now at appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. So the drugs that are being taken out there, let's just go through a couple here. Let's say Xanax and pick your beta blocker or whatever. If you did the HRV, now I'm not going to hold anybody to any numbers, but could you give us a guess on what you think, instead of taking blood pressure medication or, you know, mood stabilizers, what percentage do you think if we did HRV, we wouldn't have to take that? I know you're taking a lot of people, but 10%, 20%, what do you think?
I think depends on the drug, but we could replace a lot of Xanax use with HRV, with consistent HRV training. I don't know, maybe 50, 60%, maybe more, and drugs like Xanax actually lower your heart variability. So they actually are not so good for you in lots of ways, psychologically, physiologically. So not great. Beta blockers, under medication for high blood pressure, those are often, necessary for other reasons. So, it's really
we're not telling anybody not to take their blood pressure medicine.
Right. So we do want to be careful with that. So often, if you add HRV training to blood pressure medication, your blood pressure is going to stabilize sooner. You may not need as much medication. And so many folks out there, they're taking the medication, but their blood pressure is not actually adequately controlled. And adding HRV training to that will enable them to get much closer, or perhaps get their blood pressure under control. People who are taking beta blockers for speaking anxiety, right? That we can probably eliminate altogether with HRV and mindfulness training. People do have to invest time and emotional energy into that, but we could probably get 90% of folks off of these medications with that kind of anxiety.
Yeah. And most of the sleeping medications damage the architecture of sleep, which is, I think, kind of the unsaid statement when people medicate for sleep.
They don't work long-term, right? Yeah. After 3 months, they give no benefit.
Yeah. Benzodiazepines are REM suppressors. If you want to end up having a lack of memory consolidation, stop your REM at night. You really can't take that kind of a drug long-term without damaging your sleep and having a really awful dependency. As you take benzodiazepines, your body replicates GABA receptors, which are kind of the target. And if you have more receptors, it's harder to saturate them. So your anxiety arousal level is increasing, and you have to increase your dose if you're going to have that as your solution. And that's not a solution. It's a guaranteed problem. And getting off of benzodiazepines, if you become really extremely physiologically dependent on it, very difficult. At the state hospital where I worked, we had people come in for medical detox off of benzos. And, you can see them walk down the hall, fall to the floor, convulse. You've stopped taking something that suppresses the level of activation, and your brain rebounds into a higher level of agitation and activation. So they fall down, they convulse, they get up, dust themselves off, and you say, "John, you just fell to the ground and had a seizure. How are you?" He says, "I didn't fall to the ground and have a seizure." They have no recollection of the event at all. And it's totally destroyed their ability to function in society at that point. And as one of the people told me, addiction takes all the fun out of the drugs. What started as something that they kind of enjoyed ends up being something that they're searching for in order to feel halfway okay. And there's no more, you know, enjoyment or, you know, fun left in it.
But the psychiatrists, when people come in, I'm under the impression they say, hey, why don't you give this a try, versus they'll just write the script. Here you go. It's supposed to be a short-term thing, but they're taking it for years and they're not offering the HRV first. It's almost like you got to try this first, see if it does anything for you. And then, of course, they'll go back home and they won't try it. And they'll come back, yeah, I tried it, it didn't work, give me the script. How do you get past that?
Well, I think, you know, right now, HRV is the last resort, not the first resort. Yeah. So many people come to me, you know, I've tried 50 things and now I'm here because none of those 50 things worked well enough. So I'm desperate, you know, I'm desperate enough to try this. I think that's already part of the problem, is that we are the, you know, we're the last resort, not first, which is where we, you know, should be. And then there is the time and effort and the habit change that needs to happen. And it's just plain hard, right? You know, this is not, that's the reality. You know, it's so much easier to take a pill, and this is not a judgment, right? You know, hey, you know, hard for me too, right? You know, it's so hard to get into that habit of, you know, taking your reading in the morning, doing your 20 minutes of HRV training, you know, at some point during the day. It's hard to find time. It's hard to remember, you know, it's hard to set aside other things because we have, you know, 50 million things that are competing. No question, it's hard. And taking a pill takes a second, and you're thinking that's that, right? So that competing, you know, immediate gratification, like I can take a pill right now and not have to worry about this for the rest of the day. It's so tempting. So it really has to start with, I think, what you were talking about earlier, Pete, getting people into that habit when they're so much younger. Then, you know, by the time they get to be adults with, you know, 50 million competing things, this is already part of what they're doing.
And like we said, it's a short-term thing. And is this a contributing to dementia, Alzheimer's, you know, if you're on benzos for a long period of time? I don't know. I've heard it is. So if you're going to study to be a psychologist, psychiatrist, you know, you're the Harvard person, okay? I'm the Southern Illinois person. He's a North Dakota State person. Do they teach this in the schools, you know, if you want to be a psychologist? Should it be one of the mandatory courses? I don't know if it is or it isn't. Do they teach it?
Well, this is where I learned it. But as I said, it was an optional course that not everybody had to take. Yes, it's available, but not nearly widely enough, and not enough people end up having access.
So if we know it works, it should be done. And if you're learning to be a psychologist, they don't make you learn it. I'm scratching my head. How does that get fixed?
Even within the field of psychology, most therapists, I don't honestly don't know the numbers, but I'm going to guess at least 80% have no idea. Because this is not being taught, and it should be.
Jay, how do we? That's how we started this podcast. You know, we're trying to spread the word. Jay's been trying to spread the word since the early 70s. And, you know, I just got in this, you know, 4 years ago.
Obviously, I'm terribly inefficient at spreading the word.
But with this podcast, you're picking up speed, my friend.
Well, there you go. I mean, that's how you do it, right? Little by little, over time, you get the word out. That's what we need to do.
Well, the government needs to get into this, and politics and government, all this data that's being generated, it's in all these silos. It'd be nice if there was an open source or something where it all got deposited in there and you could take advantage of it. We've had a lot of people on the show, and a lot of people are doing the same things. And it'd be nice if you could, you know, like the internet got created, you know, connecting people. Okay. When you have two computers connected, it's not as valuable as four computers connected, right? 4, 16, 32. If we could have everybody is on the same page and says, okay, this is what we need to do. Is the government the only one that could make this happen, ladies and gentlemen?
Probably not. But you know, I'm sure there are other ways. You know, one thing actually that's happening right now in California, you know, is the massive effort to get the ACEs, you know, survey out and you know interventions, you know, out to kids much earlier, right? So that's one way that we can get HRV interventions, you know, as part of that. I don't think it is, but there, you know, from what I understand, there's been a lot of funding, you know, funneled to that. So you know, getting heart durability training as part of that intervention would go such a long way. And then you know, other states will often model themselves on California, right? And you know, getting that into every state, that could be a great way to do it.
And the ACEs testing is essentially like a diagnosis. You've got a problem, but there's a solution to match up with it. And it's not one where you have to go off somewhere for surgery or anything like that. I mean, this is start them early in school and add in HRV as a and mindfulness together as a set of techniques. And you're going to see a lot less interpersonal difficulties in schools. You see the kids wind down by using this, and if they're not all wound up by the time they have to go out for playground, there's fewer fights on the playground, and so fewer kids expelled, and the entire school system is going to have a huge benefit. So it's something that needs to be instituted at a grade school, preschool level, and worked into the curriculum solidly. That it's nice to see some universities having mind-body medicine or mind-body studies or psychophysiology if they want to get a little bit fancier with their terminology. But it's good to see some of that percolating up in university coursework. And at one point, Richard Sherman had his mind-body coursework as a PhD, but he needed to have it in an accredited university, and he had paired up with a university in New Mexico who was going through their evaluation for being accredited on the assumption that they would become accredited. And that when that fell through, they needed to find a university to host them. And he asked me to sit on their board to help look for a host university. And I happen to have already interacted with Saybrook in a totally different area. They have some work on essentially institutional, like business end of things. And I was enough of a gadfly with a refinery here in the Bay Area that I asked them to put some money into Saybrook to fund some institutional organizational research that they were doing. And so I had gotten them a grant for quite a few thousand dollars. And so they kind of knew me. And I called the president of the university, asked him to lunch, and free lunches. I gave him a spreadsheet and said, look it over. If it looks favorable, we've got an entire PhD program that your university could host. And all the lecturers and everything, all the courses are APA accredited already and ready to roll. He looked it over and said, "Geez, Jay, this looks great. We're in the midst of our accreditation review, Western, accreditation. And as soon as that's done, we'll add this in. And that it'll be evaluated on our next go around." And when they picked it up, basically it's worked so well that this is now a core part of Saybrook, and it draws good students to Saybrook, and but other universities obviously as well. It's important to have something other than academics about academics, academics about mind and brain and interactions, mind-body medicine. that this makes it physiologic and personal in a way that academic studies just don't. And I tell you, the students are really a wonderful group too. They're extremely motivated and very bright. And you know, I think some of them are going to end up shining in the future as stars within the field. Everybody has to start somewhere, but it looks like they're starting kind of a notch up from anywhere I started, that's for sure.
What budget do you need to do HRV?
Actually, not that much. Yeah. I mean, you do need, you know, ideally you do need some devices, but again, you know, with limited budget, you can get devices that are way less expensive than, you know, the FDA approved, you know, big scale, big scale ones. You can operate on a, you know, probably a few $1,000 budget.
In the school systems, I mean, just learning how to breathe, like you said, at the bare bones could be zero. If you want to take
that could be zero.
And you want to, and if you want to scale and measure the results, yeah, a couple bucks compared to, you know, the insurance companies, they won't cover HRV, will they?
Some do, but most don't. And again, it does not make any sense because the amount of savings it would provide them just from that purely financial standpoint, it would just really make sense.
Look at the long-term outcome from an ACEs score greater than 4. What's the insurance company's cost for all of that later life hypertension, heart problems,
depression, you know,
suicidality? I mean, the early intervention to avoid the eventuality of a bad ACEs score. No, I took the ACEs test. I got a 0. I feel guilty, you know. So the one of the few things that has ever made me feel guilty, you know. So, but you know, I've always done what I've been able to help students, in part because of guilt. I had a really wonderful upbringing and could do whatever I wanted to because my family was well-to-do. And at university, if I wanted to do a project or take a course or do a weekend trip with other students or something, it was something I could do easily. No problem. But I see students out there, they don't have money for their food even, you know, so I've always done what I could to try and help students. And you know, I'm a sucker for a student. I've $17,000 in auctioning off shaving my beard.
That's right. That's always a favorite.
Well, I have to say, it's a little bit nutty. But then a little bit nutty and me kind of go together, okay, you know. When I did it on Australia, I have to say I got quite a few askance looks when I proposed, you know, people, you know, bidding for the rights to shave my beard. But that auction took off. You know, $5,000 later, their student fund ended up with a bump up in $5,000 that they hadn't seen in a long time. You know, and what's really crazy, they pasted what they shaved off of me onto one of those wig heads that they measure for EEGs, you know. So this wig head had that rattiest beard and mustache pasted on it. The next year, they auctioned that for $500. And I'm thinking, you should burn it, you know. So, but, oh, well, no accounting for taste, obviously. But I always describe it as a low overhead donation. So,
Dr. Hazan, another strategy maybe, role models, professional athletes, peak performance, that they use HRV, don't they?
Yes, I think there is not enough talk about it. Yeah. There is, again, you know, a lot of athletes use, you know, the Whoop and, you know, the Oura Ring and things like that, but not a ton of understanding of what those numbers mean and exactly what to do with them. And none of these provide HRV training, right? You know, knowledge about HRV is one thing, and there is definitely not enough of that, unfortunately. A lot of people who use HRV do so with very scant understanding of what exactly is being measured and what this information tells them. But this idea that you can actually train your HRV to improve performance is even, you know, way behind the eight ball, right? And that, and a lot of these apps and devices just don't want to offer that.
Because there's the NFL Combine that's usually in March or April of the year. So you have everybody goes to Indianapolis and they... The athletes show their wares, they run a 40-yard dash, they do a bench press, and they train for this event so they can peak at that particular time, because if they get good numbers, then they will rise in stock and get drafted higher and make more money. How would HRV help them in the training up to that event? I know it could be a simple answer, but with all the stress, but it should help their physical performance, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we know that HRV helps with physical endurance, right? You know, you can simply run longer or run faster or both, right? You know, HRV is all about helping your nervous system regulate itself, right? And what do you need for optimal performance? An optimally regulated nervous system. So there is a direct relationship between training your heart durability and seeing an improvement in performance. And, you know, research very much shows that. And so it's both helping regulate, stress and anxiety and that physiological activation pre-performance and the ability of the nervous system to actually be at its best. You know, with these high-level athletes, their physical abilities are pushed to the very edge, right? You know, the difference between, being elite and just below that is incremental, tiny, right? HRV training can give people exactly that edge, you know, to get over that tiny hump, yeah. And ultimately make a huge difference.
The percentage of the population that gets to be an elite athlete is very small, but the percentage of people that become astronauts or cosmonauts is even smaller. And HRV was developed in the Soviet Union specifically for their space program. Mm-hmm. And it's not for sending a monkey into space, it's for people. And, if it was that critical that they spent that much science time developing it for their cosmonauts, don't you know it's got a huge value in other elite athlete circumstances? And the precise benefit may not be as well identified as it was for the cosmonauts, but it's there, and it needs to be picked up. If at the combine they actually measure the HRV on the athletes, they may have a piece of information that would end up ranking somebody a little higher or a little lower on their rankings. It'd be a good thing to add in on the evaluation. And that's a small little thing, because they're always trying to figure out how to test and rank differentially. And it's an objective measure, and I think it could be added in very readily. Probably should be.
Let's throw in another role model, if you want to call it that. Musicians, rock stars, you get the rush performing on the stage, and then when you're done, you can't go to sleep, so you take something to go, right? And you regulate yourself that way. I mean, that's got to help, right?
Well, that's what's available, right? That's what people know about. Yeah.
Doctor, you have a new book out, Heartbeat for Business. Tell me about that. I'm all about business. What is it about?
So the book is about optimizing performance for business leaders, business professionals, team leaders. How can you use heart durability and training and heart durability biofeedback to improve your performance and your team performance? What does HRV tell you about your team? What does HRV tell you about how to improve things? And kind of the book is built around that. But of course, it also has strategies that are not directly related to HRV, but in kind of optimizing your team performance and your own leadership.
That is very cool. The companies get it in that way. Because, I mean, they spend all this money on training, especially salespeople, sales enablement, getting the right mindset to be able to communicate with people. Do you get a lot of companies bringing you in? I know you're, you know, TED Talks, everybody sees you, but are you getting some open doors into corporations?
More and more so. This was the kind of corporate training was on the upswing, and then COVID hit, and then it was all online. It's, you know, but now we actually have so much better ways of measuring HRV remotely. And now this is kind of all coming back in a kind of hybrid model where we can do remote monitoring training, where we can do stuff in person. Absolutely. That's a big part of what I do.
Who are you helping at the companies? Like, are you going through human resources? Or are you going through the sales team? Like, I'm very curious.
It depends. It depends on the company. Sometimes it's oftentimes it's their kind of internal education department and some wellness officers.
Wellness.
You know, it can be HR, although so I think less so. It's often wellness, and it's often, you know, people who are working with the leaders. So oftentimes this is kind of how it gets propagated. You know, we're training the leaders who are then making changes in how they're interacting with their teams, and it kind of propagates top down that way.
Makes sense. People don't quit companies, they quit their leader.
That's right.
That's a good business to be in. Dr. Kazan, thank you so much for coming on the Neuro Noodle podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a fabulous discussion.
The Neuro Noodle podcast is supported by listeners and businesses just like you. Like our gold supporter, Applied Neuroscience, and our silver supporter, Mind Media. Earn up to 16 CEU hours by attending Applied Neuroscience's NeuroGuide workshops in Madeira Beach, Florida. They're led by none other than Dr. Robert Thatcher himself. There are two ways you can attend, online or in person, with the link appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. Earn up to 16 CEU hours. Sign up now at appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. Mind Media. Get the latest EEG and neurofeedback technology from mindmedia.com. Their semi-dry sensor caps is a wonder to see, and their EEG amplifiers have been trusted in the field for decades. Their neurofeedback and QEG courses will get you up to speed in no time. Visit mindmedia.com now.